Hey Amarillo, I'm Jason Boyette, and you're listening to Hey Amarillo, the interview podcast featuring some of the most interesting people and stories of Amarillo, Texas. This episode of Hey Amarillo is supported by Amarillo Habitat for Humanity, which works with families across the city to provide an alternative path to home ownership. This includes financial stability courses, volunteer construction, sweat equity from the families themselves, reasonable down payments, and no interest loans. It's not a free giveaway. Strong and stable homes help build strong and stable communities. And there are a lot of great nonprofits in Amarillo, but Habitat is the only one that focuses on affordable home ownership. It helps people help themselves. And that's why I really love this organization. Thanks to Amarillo Habitat for Humanity for sponsoring this podcast. Learn more at amarillohabitat.org. Today's guest is Darlene Martin. And Darlene is one of those multi-hyphenate guests whose career and impact aren't easily described in a quick podcast intro. She spent decades as an elementary school teacher. She was a hospice volunteer for years. She's been a board member for a number of organizations, including the Turn Center, which has had an enormous personal impact on her own life. And she's the founder and ambassador of an after-school program for Austin Middle School students called Bear Paws, which is associated with Westminster Presbyterian Church and might soon be implemented at other middle schools. So we have a lot to talk about in this episode, and I really enjoyed this conversation. Here's Darlene Martin. Darlene Martin, welcome to the Hey Amarillo podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Jason. This is fun. I can't believe I'm here.
Well, I am glad you're here. Mm-hmm. I want to start with you the same way I start with all my guests, and that's to ask why you're in Amarillo. So what brought you to this area in the first place?
Well, I was born here at St. Anthony's Hospital, and I was raised here. I had great parents, my mom especially, but I went to Bivens Elementary, Austin Middle School, was Austin Junior High at the time, Tascosa, and WT.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you graduate from Tascosa knowing what you wanted to do at WT, or was it even a decision to go to WT? Did you look at other colleges?
I've known all my life my decision was I was going to be a teacher.
Okay.
And so when I graduated in 1979, I knew I was going to go to WT and work part-time during the day and go to WT sometimes at night, but I was WT all the way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was, you were never one of those kids who was eager to get out of town once you graduated.
I'm a homebody, and I don't know. I just love it here. And I really didn't want to leave my parents.
Okay. You know? Tell me what it was like to be a high school student during the 70s. You're a little bit older than a lot of my guests, not all of them. But I want to hear what Amarillo was like in those days, you know, experiencing it during that stage of life.
Well, I graduated from Tascosa in 1979, but what I remember is we used to have parties and dances that included disco music.
Okay.
And
Which was a hot thing back then, right?
Saturday Night Fever, Donna Summer, I mean, that type of stuff. And I don't know, it was just different than it is today.
Were those the cruising up and down folk
years? I'm about to tell you about
Tell me about that.
Okay. Well, my favorite street in Amarillo is Polk Street, because my dad was assistant general manager of Santa Fe before they merged with Burlington.
Okay.
And so we would go down to see my dad at the Santa Fe building. The Santa Fe building. And I remember looking up and thinking, wow, my dad's up there on the 8th floor. And then when we would go in, there would be an elevator man, and he would push the elevator for us, and we would go up there. That was really unique. Mm-hmm. And then when we would drive by, I would just think, there's my dad's office. And then when I became 16, I got my first car. Guess where I went? I had to drag Polk, because that was the thing to do back then. There and Sonic over on Tekla, I dragged there too. But
Sonic is still a hangout for teens.
Yes, it is. So. Yeah. So anyway, and then finally, now I like to hang out on Polk Street because I love the Barfield building.
Okay.
Yeah. So had a couple of parties there, and there's something about it.
Downtown has changed a lot since the 70s.
Yes, it has.
But it's maybe on a path toward some of that same liveliness, I guess, that it had back then.
It's good to see all the changes that Center City has done.
Yeah.
I really like it.
So you went to WT intending to become a teacher. Tell me about that career.
Okay. They say you never forget your first grade teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, I never forgot my first grade teacher, so I always wanted to be a first grade teacher. And so I went to WT to get elementary education certification, and then I went back to get a master's because I wanted to teach reading to people that struggle with reading, and so I got a master's in reading, and then I thought, well, why don't I just become a principal? And so I didn't have enough hours in middle management, so I had to go all the way back through again to get my certification in middle management.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were doing that as you were already teaching?
Yes.
Like those were things that were added on to an existing full-time career?
I would teach during the day and go to school at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did that last where you were teaching during the day and taking night classes?
Well, truly about 5 years.
Okay.
I graduated with my last master's in 1991.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Tell me then about your teaching career. What did it look like?
Well, I began in 1986 at Eastridge Elementary, actually. And I stayed there for 4 years teaching what was called then Chapter 1 reading for specialization with kids that had trouble with reading.
Okay.
And then one day, Maxine Roy, the personnel director at the time, who I dearly loved because she gave me a chance, you know, she called me up and said, "Darlene, you're being moved to Margaret Wills Elementary." And I said, "Really?" And she goes, "Yes, we're going to move you over there and you're going to teach first grade, all of first grade, not just development, just not developmental reading." So I started my career at Margaret Wills in 1991, and then I concluded there when I retired in 2014.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a lengthy career at one school.
Mm-hmm.
And did you teach first grade the whole time?
The whole time.
That's amazing.
And do you still remember your first grade teacher?
I absolutely do.
That's true then. Yes. Yeah. So I've taught a lot of kids, and I see a lot of kids I used to teach. They remember me, and I say, "Now, what was your name again?" And
I was going to say, that's long enough to teach a kid and then for them to have a child and that child to end up in your class, too.
Right.
Did that ever happen?
Yes.
Okay.
And then also people will say, "Yes, you were my first grade teacher. You still look the same." And I'd laugh and say, "Yeah, I really do." And they say, "No, you really look young. You look young." And I say, "Thank you."
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
It's harder for you to recognize them because they've grown up. But if they can still recognize you, then you're doing something right.
I was at Watersteel this morning, and the girl at the window said, "Is your name Darlene Martin?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "I'm Greenlee. You were my first grade teacher." I said, "Oh, well, hi." She goes, "You still look the same." I said, "Thank you." I mean, you know, it's funny. That happens to me all the time.
Is it hard? I say this as a podcast interviewer, and I've interviewed, 350 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if I see them in public, like they're going to come say hi to me. I have to remember names and faces.
Right.
You've got, 30 kids a year for 25 or 30 years. That's a lot remember.
Uh-huh.
And those kids have changed since they were 6 years
yes,
old
they
in your
have.
Class.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
I just say, like this morning, I said, "Really? Good to see you again." And I say, "Now, what are you doing now? Are you married? Do you have kids?" And they give me a synopsis of their life, and we kind of touch base for that brief moment. But I think, wow, I had a part in that person's life, you know?
They will never forget you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot to ask you to remember every single name and
they
face,
They grow up and go off, and after first grade, and they go into second grade, I kind of forget about them and get the next group. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a revolving cycle. But yeah, it's odd.
Tell me how you think about like a first grade teacher. Like you asked me, do you remember your first grade teacher? Like that's a very influential moment in a child's life. It's something they are going to remember. It's like their first full day at school. How do you think beyond just like the classroom teaching them things, how do you think about the influence that you had in a child's life, in setting the tone for their elementary school experience, all those things?
Right.
That feels very heavy to me as a responsibility.
Mm-hmm. I think that people remember their first grade teacher because that age, they're so vulnerable. They're still loving. They still want to hug you.
Right.
They just look up to you like you're their second mom. And, I think it's my job to love them and encourage them and speak sweet words to them so that they can feel good about themselves. And I think that's why I was so successful, is that I was just so loving and kind and encouraging. Yeah, I had a few discipline problems. Yes, I did. But for the most part, when they left me, they were the ones crying,
yeah,
you know, because of the impact I had on their lives. But I just want to love them into success.
That's not always something you can teach in college. You know, yeah, you can learn how to be a teacher, mm-hmm, but that emotional component might not come naturally to mm-hmm everybody. Is and that something that maybe you learn as you go, like that experience kind of teaches mm-hmm you?
Experience. I think it's all about experience and knowing yourself well, that know what you can and cannot give this child, but how do I help this child to the best of my ability? Mm-hmm. And that phrase, loving them to success, came from Russell Lowry Hart,
yeah,
at AC several years ago before they got the Aspen Award. He would always say, we're going to love them to success. We're going to love them to success. And that just always kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It applies to college students and applies to six-year-olds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would like to touch on, just because this is, you know, this is an audio format, people can't see you, but you walk with a couple of assistants. You have some, what uh-huh are actually hiking poles that you use in lieu of maybe walking with a cane. I wonder if you can tell me about that, because I know that has been sort of a lifelong challenge that you've faced. So
yes,
for people that can't see you, mm-hmm, tell me about that.
Okay, well, I was born with hemiplegia, cerebral palsy. That means one side of my body is affected. It's my left side, is my weaker side. And so I've always struggled with my walking. I've always worked on my walking. But 2 years ago, I had a back surgery, a back fusion. And canes weren't working for me. Walkers weren't working for me. And so I was a suggestion from a physical therapist was, why don't you get you a pair of walking sticks? Mm-hmm. And that way you have, you're standing straight up, you're getting your core strength, your shoulders are backing down. It'll help you with your gait pattern. It'll help you with your stride length. And so I did that, and things really improved with me.
Okay.
And I noticed that I sometimes try not to use them, but I'm really at my best when I'm walking with those. And kind of they've become really popular with people around me. And I say, well, these are my sticks, but I call this one goodness because that's for my good leg, my right leg. And this one is mercy for my left leg that needs a lot of mercy. So goodness and mercy, they follow me all the days of my life. And people crack up about that, but really people will stop me and say, where did you get those poles? And I say, Academy. And they said, that's a cool idea. And I especially like it because it doesn't look very orthopedic.
Right.
It looks really sporty, and I'm all about the sporty look and all that. So my poles are special to me.
I think that is a really interesting way to look at that, because if someone were to see you in public and you're using a cane,
mm-hmm,
or a walker or something like that, then the idea is, oh, that person needs some extra support. Like, mm-hmm, like that sort of feels negative.
Uh-huh.
And the hiking sticks feel like you're on a trek.
Yeah.
You know, you're powering your way through the mall or the grocery, yeah, store or whatever. Yeah. And so there is a perception aspect to it that is, mm-hmm, interesting.
Yeah, people see me sometimes and they tease me like, are you going skiing today? Are you on the slopes today or what? But I say, yeah, these are my sticks. I love them. You know, so they usually comment that they really like them and what a great idea.
But that's something that you've dealt with for your entire life, you,
yes,
know, walking and, mm-hmm, and maybe some going through therapy and dealing, mm-hmm, with that. I wonder how that impacted you as a teacher, because I know that there's a lot of opportunities for education. There's a lot, mm-hmm, of opportunities for encouragement of children who, mm-hmm, maybe were born with, mm-hmm, a disability or have a limp or maybe have a learning disability, and they can see, here's my teacher, mm-hmm, and she's amazing. I love her. But, you know, she's got a cane or she's got a limp or something like that.
Well, actually, when I was teaching, I was much younger then. And I didn't have the back problems that I have now. I didn't have the back surgeries that I have had now. So back then, I wasn't walking with such difficulty.
Okay.
So I could keep up with the kids back then, but as I got older, they got younger and I got slower.
Okay.
And so I'm amazed that I could do that back then. Looking at myself now, I think, oh, how did I ever do that? But mostly what's unique about me is that I'm so compassionate and I feel other people's feelings, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. And I could just see that a child really needed love, needs encouragement. And I think that was really my forte. And what made me such a great teacher is that I had this unique ability to shower compassion on kids that really needed it. You know?
So I know that your teaching career ended several years ago, but uh-huh. you haven't been, you know, fully retired like we might think of retirement.
So
tell me a little bit about what you've been doing since then.
Well, I retired in 2014, but you never really retire. I was going to do something. I just wasn't sure. But lately, I've been involved in so many things. Number one, I'll always help the Turn Center because that's where I grew up and got the majority of my physical therapy. So I'm on the board of the Turn Center, but I've just rolled off of that. I was on there for 6 years. So I work for the Turn Center. I work for Olivia's Angels, a hospice, helping that. I'm on the board of that. I'm on the Sister Bear Foundation that helps mm-hmm. people with medical difficulties get the equipment and the therapies they need. And I'm also on the board of The Place because two of my dear friends started that to help with the refugee
Refugee
Language Project. We Find in Love and The Place all in one conglomeration there over on Plains. And so that's what keeps me busy. And then the majority of my time, the greatest thing that I'm doing right now is I work for Westminster Presbyterian Church mm-hmm. and Austin Park, and we formed an after-school program called Bear Paws. And so that gets a lot of my attention.
Yeah, Bear Paws is one of the reasons that you ended up on my radar. And I want to talk about how that developed, because a lot of people understand an after-school program, but we tend to think of it as something for little elementary mm-hmm. kids, you know, whose parents might be at work. This is an after-school program for middle school students, which is a little bit different. So tell me how that developed and how you were involved with it.
Okay, during COVID, my pastor approached me and he said, "Darlene, look at all these kids out here on our lawn hanging out all hours after school and hanging out in the park." He said, "We really need to do something about that." He said, "Why don't we just get them together? We'll serve popcorn and hot chocolate and we'll tutor them." Well, I thought, okay, that's a pretty good idea. But I researched it and I researched it for weeks and weeks. What are highly effective after school programs for middle school? And there was a main research by Harvard actually that said, because of COVID, students are losing their academic gains in reading and math. They're isolated. They're on their phones all the time. They're not at school. They need social skills. So, and another article caught my attention that said, after school kids need fun, they need food, and friendship. And so I thought, well, let's just focus on that, food, fun, and friendship. So that was my first approach, my thinking. And then I looked out at Austin Middle School, and they have this big bear on the side of the building with the paws going out like right. this. And I thought, okay, Baylor Bears, okay, Austin Bears, okay, that paw is drawing my attention. So I thought, PAWS, what's an acronym I could make up with the word PAWS? And I thought, well, it's going to be in conglomeration with Westminster and the people of Westminster, so let's call P, people, A, at, W, Westminster, and an S, serving. Well, what are we going to serve? Well, we're going to serve them prayer. We're going to serve them acceptance. We're going to serve them a willingness to listen and understand and a place for safety and security.
Okay.
So that's really how it all came about.
How did kids respond to that?
Well, I felt like I was a candy solicitor or something at first because I would stand out. Or maybe I had,
hey kids, come on over here.
Had a trench coat with watches in there, and I would say, hey, do you want to join Bear Paws? As they would, after school, I'd be there every day after school saying, do you want to join Bear Paws? Do you want to join Bear Paws? It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And so basically, I was soliciting and just handing out packets. Get your mom to sign this and bring it back. This is going to be a great thing. So we started out. 2/22/22.
Okay.
February 22nd, 2022. And we had 12 kids signed up. And we just fed them great fast food. We had fun games. We had wonderful speakers. And they learned a lot of lessons about things going on in Amarillo. And then we had tutoring too.
Okay.
And so word got out. And so in 2023, we had like 23 kids. And then now this year, I'm proud to say we have 53 on our roster and 48 attending regularly now.
Did it feel like a stretch for you as a teacher? I mean, first graders are very different from sixth and seventh graders.
It was a big stretch for me. I was a little afraid, what if they don't like it? Are we doing the right things? Will we have enough money? Will we get enough volunteers? Because people are scared of sixth, seventh, and eighth graders.
Oh, yeah.
They're a different group. You know, so people were scared.
Even high school teachers, are a little bit nervous around.
So I thought, man, am I up for this task? And I just said, God, you're going to have to help me. Let's go. You know, and that's kind of how I approached it.
You just jumped into it.
I just jumped into it.
One of the things that's interesting to me is that, you know, Westminster is right across the street from Austin. The park is right across the street. It's in a real unique position to be able to offer that kind of services. But as I understand, like, there's interest from other middle schools now in a similar program. And I wonder how you think about that as you try to figure out, okay, would this work at another school?
I've thought about that because I've been asked to maybe consider developing one for other schools, but it's very strategic. You need to have a church that's near a middle school. You need to have money for the food. You need to have a group of highly trained volunteers and mostly kids that really love middle schoolers. And so that's really what it is in a nutshell. And then even deeper than that, you've got to form a brand. Like, people see our brand, our little Bear Paws, and they see Bear Paws and P-A-W-S, they're beginning to have an association with that brand. And so it's a lot about branding, too.
Okay.
And you need a very supportive school principal. You know, and I can say we have a great principal, Jim Potts, over there, Ben. He is 100% on board with us.
I want to talk about some other elements to your volunteer career, because one of the things we talked about off mic was your hospice involvement. I know you're still involved with that as a board member, but that you also just spent time volunteering at a local hospice. And I wonder, that's going to be a foreign concept maybe to a lot of listeners. So tell me about that and why that was important to you.
Okay, my dad died March 29th of 1995. And I was really intrigued by the care that he received, by the kindness of the nurses, the spiritualness of the whole experience. And I just felt so comforted through all that. And I was scared to death of losing my parents. And so when he died in 1995, I attended their grief recovery program that they had there at the unit. We no longer have a freestanding hospice unit, but I went through their program for grief recovery. And then I thought, you know what? They at the end, they said, would anyone like to maybe consider volunteering? And I thought, you know, this really is maybe something I'm interested in. So in 1996, I went through their training for hospice volunteers. And then I started, I thought, well, what day could I do this? I think I'm going to devote my Saturday morning. So I would go every Saturday, and I would get there at 6:30 a.m.
Which hospice was this?
It was BSA Hospice downtown.
Right.
And so I would go every Saturday morning and get there at 6:30 because the shift change was about to happen. So I would help the nurses answer the phone. I would take breakfast trays to the patients that were still eating. I would make sure the family had a tray to eat. Sometimes the family needed to just go home for a little bit and change clothes. I would sit with the patients. I would help the nurses give the patients baths and stuff like that. I was just all hands-on. And I actually did that for 20 years, for two decades of my life. Every Saturday morning, you count on me, I would be there, unless it was snowing so badly I couldn't get there. But I was there until, and I was there the day they closed the doors in 2016, which is now, you know, Faith City Mission has that building now. But I just consider that time and that place to be very sacred. And I'm sorry we don't have it anymore, but it's for financial reasons that they had to stop. There's really not any freestanding hospice units anywhere that I know of, but we just had to stop for financial reasons. But I still wanted to be a part of the whole hospice thought. And so they asked me, would you consider being on our board? So I've been on the board of Olivia's Angels now for a long time.
That's going to be an experience that, unless listeners have gone through it with a family member, that seems maybe strange to them.
That's right.
Because people are uncomfortable with death.
Mm-hmm.
We don't like to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in a hospice, like, you are face-to-face
with
death. Whether you are actually a patient or volunteering there or working there every day, you know, you're dealing with the reality of that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could talk about why that attracted you so much and why you felt equipped to help in that. Because not everybody's going to feel like, oh, I would be terrible at that. I don't want to be around grieving families or struggling patients or something like that.
I think I have so much empathy and I have so much compassion.
The same things that made you a good first grade teacher.
And I think that that just comes naturally to me, and people find me to be comforting. And I just think that by serving there and in a hospice unit, I could give a part of myself to that family for a few hours that would make a difference as they face their family member transitioning to heaven. And when you stand at the foot of a bed where someone is passing, it's deeply moving. You know, when you're there and they take their last breath and you think, man, God's right here. He just came to get them. It sends chills over you and stuff. And I think it's a very holy moment. And so I wanted to be a part of it. My mom passed away in 2010. And 8 months prior, I moved in with her because I didn't, and she did home hospice, but I was determined she would not go to assisted living, she would not go to a nursing home, I would take care of her. So for 8 months, I took care of her in home hospice with her nurses and her team, and then the last 3 or 4 days of her life, she had to go to the unit because I just could not take care of her.
It's really hard in a home setting for family members.
And I thought, and I was telling them, I was also going through 8 months of counseling with anticipatory grief. And I was telling them, you guys, you're going to have to help me because I can't live without my mom.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's been my biggest supporter, my cheerleader, my everything. And I said, this is going to kill me. This is going to kill me. And that hospice team of counselors, every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, I would meet with them. And they would just nurture me and get me prepared for what is ahead. How do you feel about that? How are you going to feel about that? What does that look like to you? How does that feel like? And when my mom did pass, of all my family members, I was the strongest.
Hmm.
You know, and they were all torn up and everything, but I was prepared. And I was with her till her very last.
And that's not something everybody thinks about. They think about, all right, how will I deal with the grief afterwards? Mm-hmm. But that pre-grief counseling
anticipatory
is,
grief, yes, will get you, and the worry about it and the fear and your emotions take over. And I still taught school during the day. I still taught at Emerald College at night. And then I would take care of my mom. In between and evenings, I would make sure she had a good meal. And then at night, I would go over to her house and stay with her. But I will say I was a little bit medicated those 8 months. They had to give me a little bit of Xanax to help my anxiety because, hey, I had a job to do.
Exactly.
You know, and I had first graders I had to teach to
read. And the school probably appreciated that,
too. And I was on target, but In the back of my mind, there was always that thought, you know, will this day be your last? Where are we today on this journey? What steps are we in? You know, and but I did get a very good caregiver for her during the day, and that helped ease my mind so much.
I want to sort of broaden the conversation at this point, because you spent so many years as a teacher. You've spent so many years working with families in a hospice environment. You've mm-hmm. worked with middle schoolers now the past few years. You've served on all these nonprofit boards. You've placed yourself in a lot of different parts of the city mm-hmm. and given yourself the opportunity to interact with a lot of different people in the city. Mm-hmm. I mean, kids at Margaret Wills are coming from a certain socioeconomic background
yes.
That's going to be different from the kids who attend Austin Middle School. Mm-hmm. Like, so tell me what you've learned just about Amarillo, because you grew up here, you knew you were going to stay here, you've had mm-hmm. an entire career here. Mm-hmm. Like, what have you come to understand about the people in this area?
The people are the best. They're the kindest, most willing to help. They're the biggest givers. They're just, the people are great. But what I saw at Margaret Wills was when I began teaching there, I had left Eastridge, and that was a whole different community out mm-hmm. there. And then I came to Margaret Wills, and it was a small neighborhood-type school, but it evolved into basically the melting pot.
Right.
There were so many refugees that were coming into Amarillo from the Catholic Family Services that were getting them over here, and that Astoria Park area over there was just full with refugees, and our school changed. Problems with the languages. My last year of teaching, in my classroom alone, there were 14 different languages.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. And so my mentor, Judy West, I will always give her praise for this, but she said, Judy, I don't know how to do this. I mean, there are all these kids, and they all need me, and I don't understand what they're saying, and I don't really know how to do this. And she said, Darlene, just bathe them in the language. Bathe them in the language. Speak to them a lot of vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Tag your room with vocabulary words. Use flashcards. Read books out loud to them. That's your job. Just help them listen to you speak the language. And ironically, kids are very resilient. Their brains are pliable. Yeah, they are pliable. They picked it up, and they were learning.
That's something that is just so fascinating to me, is how someone in your position, you know, where your job is to educate,
mm-hmm.
and we educate through language, and where you're having to work around not just one language barrier, but 14 of them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That it seems so impossible to me,
mm-hmm.
and yet love and acceptance is love and acceptance, and mm-hmm. kids can pick up on that, and we'll learn from that too.
That's right. That's the key.
You know, after a long career in Amarillo, you're still here. You didn't retire and move off someplace
nope.
or do anything
and
like that.
I never will.
Tell me why.
I love Amarillo. My friends are here. My church is here. I have things that I love to do here. I love organizations here. When I even go on a trip, I get homesick. That's mm-hmm. really weird, but I just want to be back home. I love Amarillo.
Today's episode is supported by Pinnacle by Rockrose, a new master planned neighborhood being developed at Hollywood and Bell, south of Randall High School. It's located in the Canyon ISD and is the only neighborhood in Amarillo that contains schools from kindergarten to 12th grade. So a kid can start their education at Sundown Lane Elementary, then go to Pinnacle Intermediate, Randall Junior High, and Randall High School, and all within just a few blocks of each other in that neighborhood. And so as the community develops, it will be full of open spaces and parkways. It'll include a walkway that connects all of the schools within the neighborhood. I've seen these plans and some of the featured homes, and it's just a really exciting project by Rockrose Development. To learn more, visit pinnaclebyrockrose.com. That's pinnaclebyrockrose.com. This episode of Hey Amarillo is also supported by Blue Handle Publishing, a local publishing company that has been producing some amazing titles by local and national authors. Right now, when you sign up for Blue Handle updates at their website, you can get 25% off your first order. And this applies to books like signed copies of The Heights by Ray Franz to book-related hoodies and sweatshirts and mugs. Lots of products there. So learn more and sign up at bluehandlepublishing.com. Okay, I'm back with Darlene Martin. Darlene, this is the part of the show I call Eight Straight. Eight Straight is sponsored every week by Panhandle Plains Historical Museum and Canyon. As a teacher, I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's the largest history museum in Texas, and it's known for its archaeology collection, including artifacts from the prehistoric Clovis and Folsom people, who were big game hunters who ended up in this part of the world 13,000 years ago while tracking the mammoth. You can learn more and see some of those artifacts at panhandleplains.org. Okay, when you think of Amarillo 10 years from now, what do you hope for?
Well, okay, I hope that the students that I'm working with today are 12, 13, and 14. I hope that they're 22, 23, and 24 and in Amarillo thriving.
Okay.
Whether it be from the education they got in Amarillo Public Schools or AmTech or AC or WT. And there's 50 kids right there. There's 50 possible families. And I hope that they're living in Amarillo, doing something they love, working at a job they love, or just being successful and giving back to the community.
Okay. Other than wind, what does this area have too much of?
Convenience stores.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
They're everywhere.
They are everywhere.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Every time construction starts, I'm like, what is that building going to be? And it's
a usually
totem
a,
yeah. or, yeah,
yeah
new
Murphy's, Pack-a-Sack. Yeah.
Yeah.
Convenience stores.
I imagine they get enough traffic to justify it. Mm-hmm. We all need gas. What does this area not have enough of?
I think not enough fancy grocery stores. No offense to United Market Street, but I would love to see an HEB here. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a Trader Joe's here. I would love to see Aldi's here. I just think we need a variety with some of those really fancy stores that when I go out of town, I get to visit.
Yeah. That's a unique thing about Amarillo people is a lot of us go out of town and we go to the grocery store because we don't have certain ones here. What's one local nonprofit you personally appreciate? I know you've mentioned several.
Mm-hmm. Well, my true love will always be the Turn Center. When I started my life, it was the Cerebral Palsy Center. Then it became Children's Rehabilitation Center. Then it became Richard G. Balke, and now it is the Turn Center. But that place is Amarillo's hidden treasure. Unless you know or have a need for the Turn Center, you don't really understand how wonderful it is. Mm-hmm. That Turn Center has, for 93 years, helped children with handicaps, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and now we've included under that the umbrella of autism. And it's just, there are the kindest people out there, and the best physical therapist or therapist in general that just practice best practices. Mm-hmm. And they just help kids all over the Panhandle, not just in Amarillo. So they will always have my heart, and that's my favorite.
So in a previous embodiment of what it's become, like you actually benefited from therapies there when you were a child, is that right?
Yes, I did. I always say this. I'm thankful to God, to my mom's prayers, and the Turn Center for how they helped me all those years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, because so many people who are associated with it now are arriving at it as parents. You know, mm-hmm. maybe their children are getting therapies. You were there as a kid.
Right.
And you're still involved, yeah. You know, now yeah. so many years later.
They were my first friends. I mean, all those people out there, when I was little, they were my first really dear friends. They were my first encouragers. Dearest physical therapist friend, Kathy Hyatt, is still my friend today, and we've been friends 51 years.
Okay.
You know, so I just think if you don't know, you need to go out there and take a visit, because it is truly a gem.
Okay. What's your favorite local coffee shop?
I'm not really that much of a coffee drinker, but when I go to Palace Coffee mm-hmm. in Wolfen Village. When I go in there, it reminds me that I'm maybe out of town somewhere.
Okay.
And not in Amarillo.
Yeah.
You know?
It has that feel of a little more upscale sort of
That's right.
coffee destination. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite local restaurant or food truck?
I love hamburgers. So I would say Blue Sky, number one. Mm-hmm. I like their buns. Well, their meat. I love their fries. I love that little kid's burger. You can get two of them with fries. It's just the perfect little meal. But Blue Sky. I like Malcolm's on Paramount. And everybody that really knows me knows that I love Whataburger. Mm-hmm. Whataburger on Georgia. It's like my bar cheers. Everybody knows my name in there. I walk in there, they know, do you want your usual? So, yeah, I have an addiction probably to Whataburger.
Well, that's one of those things that makes you stay relevant with mm-hmm. middle schoolers, too. Because they also love Whataburger.
Oh, they do.
Okay, what's your favorite street in Amarillo?
I would say Polk Street.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's been endearing. Your favorite street since you were a kid.
It's endearing to me. Yes, Polk Street.
How do you think about it when you think about the revitalization of Polk? I mean, you talked about the Barfield and how that's a building that you appreciate now. And you knew what it was back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So you've seen it go from a high to a low mm-hmm. to a ghost town to now back up to prominence.
I remember as a child, I would ride my bike down to the Mary E. Bivens Library there on Polk.
Yeah.
And I would go up those stairs, those creaky old stairs, and go up to the youth department and on a Saturday morning and lose myself in books. And I remember the smell of that place. The library just itself was really a great place. And then I remember there was a Woolworths down there. Mm-hmm. I remember going in there sometimes. And then there's so many memories on Polk Street for me.
Okay, last question. When was the last time you visited the Big Texan?
Thanksgiving. November 2023.
Last year?
Yes. And it was great. But I will say, if you go out there on Thanksgiving, be sure you get parties of six or more because you can get a reservation and a table in a specific time. If you go out there on a party of one or two, you're going to wait a while.
Okay.
And so but I love the prime rib. I love the Cajun turkey. I love the sweet potato. I love it all. And so and you don't have to clean up the dishes. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just... I highly like the Big Texan.
Is that something you've done for Thanksgiving?
No, I did it this year as my first time because I said I'm not going to go to anyone's home or do anything with anybody. I'm just going to go out there and enjoy the experience. And I took my brother and sister with me, but I'm going to do it again.
Okay.
And I would have done it on Christmas, but I was out of town at Christmas.
I've always wondered, you know, the families that make that a tradition, mm-hmm. you know, if there are local families that are like, this is what we're doing for Thanksgiving because of all the reasons you said.
That's right. And it was my first time, so I didn't know that you really needed a reservation for six or more to get. So we ended up waiting for about an hour and a half, but they had the television on. We could watch football. We sat out on the patio. There were little cats that were running by. So it was just really a unique experience, and I'd go again.
Okay, and for the next time, you just recruit some more friends.
Am. I'm going to recruit a lot of people.
You'll get some volunteers.
Yes, I will. Let's have Thanksgiving together.
I will. Okay, well, Darlene, that concludes the 8 straight questions. I like to close by asking my guests to endorse something. So what's one thing you would like listeners to know about or to experience?
Okay. The Westminster Presbyterian Church, church in Austin Park, our Bear Paws After School program, simply the finest. There's none like it anywhere. Every middle school needs to have it. It's great. And then also, Westminster Doggy Show is coming up April 20th. It's an extraordinary dog show for ordinary dogs.
Okay, and so it's not the New York
dogs. No, we have 10 different categories. They're fun categories from a face only a mother could love to the best sitter to the best walker to any talent the dog possesses, even owner lookalike. So it's fun, and it's a neighborhood there in Austin Park. We want the whole neighborhood to come. We want anybody to come that has a dog. It's a great experience. It's fun, and it's free.
Okay, and that's in April.
April 20th.
All right.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just want to give a pitch for Westminster Presbyterian Church. I've gone to a lot of churches, but when I joined Westminster, my whole life changed. I want to give a shout-out to our pastor, Will Esler. He's the coolest. He is the coolest, and he doesn't preach very long. We start at 10:30. We're over by 11:35. The choir is beautiful. A lot of choir teachers are in that choir. The music is moving, mm-hmm. and we have a great youth minister in Abby Jo Havens and a children's minister in Sarah Roark. It's the dream team right there, and if anybody's looking for a church, it's a small church, but it's intimate, it's loving, and it's the kindest church I've ever been in. So I love Westminster.
Okay. That's a solid endorsement. Darlene Martin, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I appreciate
it. Hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks.
And that concludes the episode. I want to say thanks again to Darlene for the interview, to Pinnacle by Rock Rose, Blue Handle Publishing, Amarillo Habitat for Humanity, and Panhandle Plains Historical Museum, of course, for supporting the podcast. Also want to say thanks to Angelina Marie for editing the show, and happy birthday to Angelina, who turns 40 this week. And yes, she said it was okay for me to say that. Thank you for listening. Hey Amarillo exists on a weekly basis because of listeners like you and the local people who support it financially through patreon.com/heyamarillo. Hey Amarillo's executive producers include Patrick Burns, Jason Burr, Katie Linger, Corey Burns, Wes Reeves, Josh Wood, Cindy Graham, and Barbara and Jim Witten. This has been episode 343. My name is Jason Boyette, and I'll see you next week.